Night caught them in Watts Wood. That was Dunk's fault. He should have gone the straight way home, the way they'd gone, but instead he'd taken them north for another look at the dam. He had half a thought to try and tear the thing apart with his bare hands, but the Severn and Sir Lucas Longinch did not prove so obliging. When they reached the dam, they found it guarded by a pair of crossbowmen with spider badges sewn on their jerkins. One sat with his bare feet in the stolen water. Dunk would gladly have throttled him for that alone, but the man heard them coming and was quick to snatch up his bow. His fellow, even quicker, had a quarrel knocked and ready. The best that Dunk could do was scowl at them threateningly. After that, there was naught to do but retrace their steps. Dunk did not know these lands as well as Sir Bennis did. It would have been humiliating to get lost in a wood as small as Watts. By the time they splashed across the stream, the sun was low on the horizon and the first stars were coming out, along with clouds of mites. Amongst the tall black trees, Egg found his tongue again.
"Sir, that fat Septon said my father sulks in Summerhall.
Words are wind.
My father doesn't sulk."
"Well," said Dunk, "he might. You sulk."
"I do not."
"Sir," he frowned.
"Do I?"
"Some. Not too often, though. Elsewise I'd clout you in the ear more than I do."
"You clouted me in the ear at the gate."
"That was half a clout at best. If I ever give you a whole clout, you'll know it."
"The Red Widow give you a whole clout?"
Dunk touched his swollen lip. "You don't need to sound so pleased about it.
No one ever clouted your father in the ear, though. Maybe that's why Prince Makar is the way he is.
When the king named Lord Bloodraven his hand, your lord father refused to be part of his council, and departed King's Landing for his own seat," he reminded Egg. "He has been at Summerhall for a year and half of another. What do you call that, if not sulking?"
"I call it being wroth," Egg declared loftily. "His grace should have made my father hand. He's his brother, and the finest battle commander in the realm since Uncle Baylor died. Lord Bloodraven's not even a real lord. That's just some stupid courtesy. He's a sorcerer, and base-born besides."
"Bastard-born, not base-born."
"Bloodraven might not be a real lord, but he was noble on both sides. His mother had been one of the many mistresses of King Aegon the Unworthy. Aegon's bastards had been the bane of the Seven Kingdoms ever since the old king died. He had legitimized the lot upon his deathbed. Not only the great bastards like Bloodraven, Bittersteel, and Daemon Blackfyre, whose mothers had been ladies, but even the lesser ones he'd fathered on whores and tavern wenches, merchants' daughters, mummers' maidens, and every pretty peasant girl who chanced to catch his eye. Fire and blood were the words of House Targaryen, but Dunk once heard Sir Arlen say that Aegon's should have been washer and bring her to my bed.
King Aegon washed Bloodraven clean of bastardy, he reminded Egg, the same as he did the rest of them.
The old High Septon told my father that king's laws are one thing and the laws of the gods another, the boy said stubbornly. True-born children are made in a marriage bed and blessed by the father and the mother, but bastards are born of lust and weakness, he said. King Aegon decreed that his bastards were not bastards, but he could not change their nature. The High Septon said all bastards are born to betrayal. Daemon Blackfyre, Bittersteel, even Bloodraven. Lord Rivers was more cunning than the other two, he said, but in the end he would prove himself a traitor too. The High Septon counselled my father never to put any trust in him, nor in any other bastards, great or small.
Born to betrayal, Dunk thought. Born of lust and weakness. Never to be trusted, great or small. Egg, he said, didn't you ever think that I might be a bastard?
You, sir?
That took the boy aback.
You are not.
I might be.
I never knew my mother, or what became of her. Maybe I was born too big and killed her. Most like she was some whore or tavern girl. You don't find high-born ladies down in Flea Bottom. And if she ever wed my father, well, what became of him then?
Dunk did not like to be reminded of his life before Sir Arlen found him.
There was a pot shop in King's Landing where I used to sell them rats and cats and pigeons for the brown. The cook always claimed my father was some thief or cut-purse. Most like I saw him hanged, he used to tell me, but maybe they just sent him to the wall. When I was squiring for Sir Arlen, I would ask him if we couldn't go up that way some day, to take service at Winterfell or some other northern castle. I had this notion that if I could only reach the wall, might be I'd come on some old man, a real tall man who looked like me. We never went, though. Sir Arlen said there were no hedges in the north and all the woods were full of wolves.
He shook his head. The long and short of it is, most like, You're squiring for a bastard.
For once, Egg had nothing to say. The gloom was deepening around them. Lantern bugs moved slowly through the trees, their little lights like so many drifting stars. There were stars in the sky as well, more stars than any man could ever hope to count, even if he lived to be as old as King Jahiri's. Dunk need only lift his eyes to find familiar friends. The stallion and the sow, the king's crown and the crone's lantern, the galley, ghost, and moon maid. But there were clouds to the north, and the blue eye of the ice dragon was lost to him, the blue eye that pointed north. The moon had risen by the time they came to Standfast, standing dark and tall atop its hill. A pale yellow light was spilling from the tower's upper windows, he saw. Most nights, Sir Eustace sought his bed as soon as he had supped, but not tonight, it seemed. He is waiting for us, Dunk knew. Bennis of the Brown Shield was waiting up as well. They found him sitting on the tower steps, chewing sour leaf and honing his long sword in the moonlight. The slow scrape of stone on steel carried a long way. However much Sir Bennis might neglect his clothes and person, he kept his weapons well.
"The lunk comes back," Bennis said. "Here I was sharpening my steel to go rescue you from that Red Widow."
"Where are the men?"
"Treb and Wetwat are on the roof, standing watch in case the widow comes to call. The rest crawled into bed, whimpering. Sore as sin they are. I worked them hard. Drew a little blood off that big lackwit just to make him mad. He fights better when he's mad."
He smiled his brown and red smile.
"Nice bloody lip you got. Next time don't go turning over rocks. What did the woman say?"
"She means to keep the water, and she wants you as well for cutting that digger by the dam."
"Thought she might," Bennis spat. "Lot of bother for some peasant. He ought to thank me. Women like a man with scars."
"You won't mind her slitting your nose, then?"
"Bugger that. If I wanted my nose slit, I'd slit it for myself."
He jerked a thumb up.
"You'll find Sir Useless in his chambers, brooding on how great he used to be."
Egg spoke up.
"He fought for the Black Dragon."
Dunk could have given the boy a clout, but the Brown Knight only laughed.
"Course he did. Just look at him. He strike you as the kind who picks the winning side?"
"No more than you, else you wouldn't be here with us."
Dunk turned to Egg. "Tend to Thunder and Maester, and then come up and join us." When Dunk came up through the trap, the old knight was sitting by the hearth in his bedrobe, though no fire had been laid. His father's cup was in his hand, a heavy silver cup that had been made for some Lord Osgray back before the conquest. A checky lion adorned the bowl, done in flakes of jade and gold, though some of the jade flakes had gone missing. At the sound of Dunk's footsteps, the old knight looked up and blinked like a man waking from a dream.
"Sir Duncan, you are back. Did the sight of you give Lucas Inchfield pause, sir?" "Not as I saw, my lord. More like it made him wroth."
Dunk told it all as best he could, though he omitted the part about Lady Hellicent, which made him look an utter fool. He would have left out the clout, too, but his broken lip had puffed up twice its normal size, and Sir Eustace could not help but notice. When he did, he frowned.
"Your lip."
Dunk touched it gingerly.
"Her ladyship gave me a slap."
"She struck you?"
His mouth opened and closed.
"She struck my envoy, who came to her beneath the checky lion? She dared lay hands upon your person?"
"Only the one hand, sir. It stopped bleeding before we even left the castle."
He made a fist.
"She wants Sir Bennis, not your silver, and she won't take down the dam. She showed me a parchment with some writing on it, and the king's own seal. It said the stream is hers, and—"
he hesitated.
"She said that you were— that you had risen with the Black Dragon."
Sir Eustace seemed to slump.
"I feared she might. If you wish to leave my service, I will not stop you."
The old knight gazed into his cup, though what he might be looking for, Dunk could not say.
"You told me your sons died fighting for the king."
"And so they did. The rightful king, Daemon Blackfyre. The king who bore the sword."
The old man's moustache quivered.
"The men of the Red Dragon call themselves the Loyalists, but we who chose the Black were just as loyal once. Though now, all the men who marched beside me to seek Prince Daemon on the Iron Throne have melted away like morning dew. Mayhaps I dreamed them. Or more like, Lord Bloodraven and his raven's teeth have put the fear in them. They cannot all be dead."
Dunk could not deny the truth of that, Until this moment he had never met a man who'd fought for the Pretender. I must have, though. There were thousands of them. Half the realm was for the Red Dragon, and half was for the Black. Both sides fought valiantly, Sir Arlan always said. He thought the old knight would want to hear that. Sir Eustace cradled his wine cup in both hands. If Daemon had ridden over Gawain Corbury, if Fireball had not been slain on the eve of battle, if Hightower and Tarbeck and Oakheart and Butterwell had lent us their full strength instead of trying to keep one foot in each camp, if Manfred Loston had proved true instead of treacherous, if storms had not delayed Lord Bracken's sailing with the Myrish crossbowmen, if Quickfinger had not been caught with the stolen dragon's eggs, so many ifs, sir. Had anyone come out differently, it could all have turned the other way. Then we would be called the Loyalists, and the Red Dragons would be remembered as men who fought to keep the usurper Daeron the False-born upon his stolen throne, and failed.
That's as it may be, my lord, said Dunk. But things went the way they went. It was all years ago, and you were pardoned.
Aye, we were pardoned. So long as we bent the knee and gave him a hostage to ensure our future loyalty, Daeron forgave the traitors and the rebels. His voice was bitter. I bought my head back with my daughter's life. Alison was 7 when they took her off to King's Landing, and 20 when she died. A silent sister. I went to King's Landing once to see her, and she would not even speak to me, her own father. A king's mercy is a poisoned gift. Daeron Targaryen left me life, but took my pride and dreams and honor.
His hand trembled, and wine spilled red upon his lap, but the old man took no notice of it.
I should have gone with bitter steel into exile, or died beside my sons and my sweet king. That would have been a death worthy of a Cheki lion, descended from so many proud lords and mighty warriors. Daeron's mercy made me smaller.
In his heart, the Black Dragon never died, Dunk realized.
My lord?
It was Egg's voice.
The boy had come in as Eustace was speaking of his death. The old knight blinked at him as if he were seeing him for the first time.
Yes, lad. What is it?
If it please you, the Red Widow says you rebelled to get her castle. That isn't true, is it?
The castle?
He seemed confused.
Coldmoat. Coldmoat was promised me by Daemon, yes, but it was not for gain, no.
Then why? Asked Egg.
Why?
Sir Eustace frowned.
Why you were a traitor, if it wasn't just the castle.
Sir Eustace looked at Egg a long time before replying,
You are only a young boy. You would not understand.
Well, said Egg, I might.
Treason is only a word. When two princes fight for a chair where only one may sit, great lords and common men alike must choose. And when the battle's done, the victors will be hailed as loyal men and true, whilst those who were defeated will be known for evermore as rebels and traitors. That was my fate.
Egg thought about it for a time.
Yes, my lord. Only King Daeron was a good man. Why would you choose Daemon?
Daeron.
Sir Eustace almost slurred the word, and Dunk realized he was half drunk.
Daeron was spindly and round of shoulder with a little belly that wobbled when he walked. Daemon stood straight and proud, and his stomach was flat and hard as an oaken shield. And he could fight. With axe or lance or flail, he was as good as any knight I ever saw. But with the sword, he was the warrior himself. When Prince Daemon had black fire in his hand, there was not a man to equal him. Not Ulric Dane with Dawn, no, nor even the Dragon Knight with Dark Sister. You can know a man by his friends, Egg. Daeron surrounded himself with maesters, septons, and singers. Always there were women whispering in his ear, and his court was full of Dornishmen. How not, when he had taken a Dornish woman into his bed and sold his own sweet sister to the Prince of Dawn, though it was Daemon that she loved? Daeron bore the same name as the young dragon, but when his Dornish wife gave him a son, he named the child Baelor, after the feeblest king who ever sat the Iron Throne. Daemon, though. Daemon was no more pious than a king need be, and all the great knights of the realm gathered to him. It would suit Lord Bloodraven if their names were all forgotten, so he has forbidden us to sing of them, but I remember. Rob Rain, Gareth the Grey, Sir Aubrey Ambrose, Lord Gorman Peak, Black Byron Flowers, Red Tusk Fireball, Bitter Steel. I ask you, has there ever been such a noble company, such a roll of heroes?
Why, lad?
You ask me why. Because Damon was the better man. The old king saw it too. He gave the sword to Damon, Blackfyre, the sword of Aegon the Conqueror, the blade that every Targaryen king had wielded since the conquest. He put that sword in Damon's hand the day he knighted him, a boy of 12.
My father says that was because Damon was a swordsman, and Daeron never was, said Aeg. Why give a horse to a man who cannot ride? The sword was not the kingdom, he says.
The old knight's hand jerked so hard that wine spilled from his silver cup.
Your father is a fool.
He is not, the boy said.
Osgrave's face twisted in anger.
You asked a question, and I answered it, but I will not suffer insolence. Sir Duncan, you should beat this boy more often. His courtesy leaves much to be desired. If I must needs do it myself, I will.
No, Dunk broke in. You won't, sir. He had made up his mind. It is dark. We will leave at first light.
Sir Eustace stared at him, stricken.
Leave?
Stand fast. Your service. You lied to us. Call it what you will. There was no honor in it. He unfastened his cloak, rolled it up, and put it in the old man's lap. Osgrey's eyes grew narrow.
Did that woman offer to take you into service? Are you leaving me for that whore's bed?
I don't know that she is a whore, Dunk said. Or a witch, or a poisoner, or none of that. But whatever she may be makes no matter. We're leaving for the hedges, not for Coldmoat.
The ditches, you mean? You're leaving me to prowl in the woods like wolves, to waylay honest men upon the roads.
His hand was shaking. The cup fell from his fingers, spilling wine as it rolled along the floor.
Go, then! Go, I want none of you! I should never have taken you on! Go!
As you say, sir. Dunk beckoned, and Egg followed. That last night, Dunk wanted to be as far from Eustace Osgrey as he could, so they slept down in the cellar, amongst the rest of Standfast's meagre host. It was a restless night. Lem and red-eyed Pate both snored, the one loudly and the other constantly. Dank vapours filled the cellar, rising through the trap from the deeper vaults below. Dunk tossed and turned on the scratchy bed, drifting off into a half-sleep, only to wake suddenly in darkness. The bites he'd gotten in the woods were itching fiercely, and there were fleas in the straw as well. I will be well rid of this place, well rid of the old man, and Sir Bennis and the rest of them. Maybe it was time that he took Egg back to Summerhall to see his father. He would ask the boy about that in the morning when they were well away. Morning seemed a long way off, though. Dunk's head was full of dragons, red and black, full of checky lions, old shields, battered boots, full of streams and moats and dams, and papers stamped with the king's great seal that he could not read. And she was there as well, the Red Widow, Rohan of the Cold Moat. He could see her freckled face, her slender arms, her long red braid. It made him feel guilty. I should be dreaming of Tansel. Tansel Too Tall, they called her, but she was not too tall for me. She had painted arms upon his shield, and he had saved her from the Bright Prince, but she vanished even before the Trial of Seven. She could not bear to see me die, Dunk often told himself, but what did he know? He was as thick as a castle wall. Just thinking of the Red Widow was proof enough of that. Tansel smiled at me, but we never held each other, never kissed, not even lips to cheek. Rohan, at least, had touched him. He had the swollen lip to prove it. Don't be daft. She's not for the likes of you. She's too small, too clever, and much too dangerous. Drowsing at long last, Dunk dreamed. He was running through a glade in the heart of Watts Wood, running toward Rohan, and she was shooting arrows at him. Each shaft she loosed flew true and pierced him through the chest, yet the pain was strangely sweet. He should have turned and fled, but he ran toward her instead, running slowly, as you always did in dreams, as if the very air had turned to honey. Another arrow came, and yet another. Her quiver seemed to have no end of shafts. Her eyes were grey and green and full of mischief.
Your gown brings out the colour of your eyes, he meant to say to her, but she was not wearing any gown, or any clothes at all. Across her small breasts was a faint spray of freckles, and her nipples were red and hard as little berries. The arrows made him look like some great porcupine as he went stumbling to her feet, but somehow he still found the strength to grab her braid. With one hard yank, he pulled her down on top of him and kissed her. He woke suddenly at the sound of a shout. In the darkened cellar, all was confusion. Curses and complaints echoed back and forth, and men were stumbling over one another as they fumbled for their spears or breeches. No one knew what was happening. Egg found the tallow candle and got it lit to shed some light upon the scene. Dunk was the first one up the steps. He almost collided with Sam Stoops rushing down, puffing like a bellows and babbling incoherently. Dunk had to hold him by both shoulders to keep him from falling. "Sam? What's wrong?"
"The sky," the old man whimpered. "The sky!"
No more sense could be gotten from him, so they all went up to the roof for a look. Sir Eustace was there before them, standing by the parapets in his bedrobe, staring off into the distance. The sun was rising in the west. It was a long moment before Dunk realized what that meant.
"Watts Wood is afire," he said in a hushed voice.
From down at the base of the tower came the sound of Bennis cursing, a stream of such surpassing filth that it might have made Aegon the Unworthy blush. Sam Stoops began to pray. They were too far away to make out flames, but the red glow engulfed half the western horizon, and above the light the stars were vanishing. The king's crown was half gone already, obscured behind a veil of the rising smoke. "Fire and sword," she said. The fire burned until morning. No one in Standfast slept that night. Before long they could smell the smoke and see flames dancing in the distance like girls in scarlet skirts. They all wondered if the fire would engulf them. Dunk stood behind the parapets, his eyes burning, watching for riders in the night. "Bennis," he said, when the brown knight came up, chewing on his sour leaf.
"It's you she wants. Might be you should go."
"What, run?" he brayed. "On my horse? Might as well try to fly off on one of these damned chickens."
"Then give yourself up. She'll only slit your nose."
"I like my nose how it is, Lunk. Let her try and take me. We'll see what gets slit open."
He sat cross-legged with his back against a merlin and took a whetstone from his pouch to sharpen his sword. Sir Eustace stood above him. In low voices they spoke of how to fight the war.
"The Long Inch will expect us at the dam," Dunk heard the old knight say, "so we will burn her crops instead. Fire for fire."
Sir Bennis thought that would be just the thing, only maybe they should put her mill to the torch as well.
"It's 6 leagues on t'other side of the castle. The Long Inch won't be looking for us there. Burn the mill and kill the miller. That'll cost her dear."
Egg was listening too. He coughed and looked at Dunk with wide white eyes.
"Sir, you have to stop them."
"How?" Dunk asked. "The Red Widow will stop them. Her and that Lucas the Long Inch. They're only making noise, Egg.
It's that or piss their britches. And it's naught to do with us now."
Dawn came with hazy grey skies and air that burned the eyes. Dunk meant to make an early start, though after their sleepless night he did not know how far they'd get. He and Egg broke their fast on boiled eggs while Bennis was rousting the others outside for more drill.
"They are Osprey men and we are not," he told himself.
He ate 4 of the eggs. Sir Eustace owed him that much, as he saw it. Egg ate 2. They washed them down with ale.
"We could go to Fair Isle, sir,"
the boy said as they were gathering up their things. "If they're being raided by the Iron Men, Lord Farman might be looking for some swords." It was a good thought. "Have you ever been to Fair Isle?"
"No, sir," Egg said.
"But they say it's fair. Lord Farman's seat is fair, too. It's called Faircastle."
Dunk laughed.
"Faircastle it shall be."
He felt as if a great weight had been lifted off his shoulders.
"I'll see to the horses," he said, when he'd tied his armour up in a bundle secured with hemp and rope. "Go to the roof and get our bedrolls, squire."
The last thing he wanted this morning was another confrontation with the Checky Lion.
"If you see Sir Eustace, let him be."
"I will, sir."
Outside, Bennis had his recruits lined up with their spears and shields and was trying to teach them to advance in unison. The brown knight paid Dunk not the slightest heed as he crossed the yard.
"He will lead the whole lot of them to death.
The Red Widow could be here any moment." Egg came bursting from a tower door and clattered down the wooden steps with their bedrolls. Above him, Sir Eustace stood stiffly on the balcony, his hands resting on the parapet.
When his eyes met Dunk's, his moustache quivered and he quickly turned away. The air was hazy with blowing smoke. Bennis had his shield slung across his back, a tall kite shield of unpainted wood, dark with countless layers of old varnish and girded all about with iron. It bore no blazon, only a centre boss that reminded Dunk of some great eye, shut tight, as blind as he is. "How do you mean to fight her?" Dunk asked. Sir Bennis looked at his soldiers, his mouth running red with sour leaf. "Can't hold the hill with so few spears. Got to be the tower. We all hole up inside." He nodded at the door. "Only one way in. Haul up them wooden steps, and there's no way they can reach us."
"Until they build some steps of their own. They might bring ropes and grapnels, too, and swarm down on you through the roof. Unless they just stand back with their crossbows and fill you full of quarrels while you're trying to hold the door."
The melons, beans, and barleycorns were listening to all they said. All their brave talk had blown away, though there was no breath of wind. They stood, clutching their sharpened sticks, looking at Dunk and Bennis and each other.
"This lot won't do you a lick of good," Dunk said, with a nod at the ragged Osprey army. "The Red Widow's knights will cut them to pieces if you leave them in the open, and their spears won't be any use inside that tower."
"They can chuck things off the roof," said Bennis. "Treb is good at chucking rocks."
"He could chuck a rock or two, I suppose," said Dunk, "until one of the Widow's crossbowmen puts a bolt through him."
"Sir?"
Egg stood beside him.
"Sir, if we mean to go, we'd best be gone, in case the widow comes."
The boy was right. "If we linger, we'll be trapped here." Yet still Dunk hesitated.
"Let them go, Bennis."
"What? Lose our valiant lads?"
Bennis looked at the peasants and brayed laughter.
"Don't you lot be getting any notions," he warned them. "I'll gut any man who tries to run."
"Try and I'll gut you." Dunk drew his sword.
"Go home, all of you," he told the small folk. "Go back to your villages and see if the fire has spared your homes and crops."
No one moved. The brown knight stared at him, his mouth working. Dunk ignored him.
"Go,"
he told the small folk once again. It was as if some god had put the word into his mouth, not the warrior. Is there a god for fools?
"Go,"
he said again, roaring it this time.
"Take your spears and shields, but go, or you won't live to see the morrow.
Do you want to kiss your wives again? Do you want to hold your children? Go home. Have you all gone deaf?"
They hadn't. A mad scramble ensued amongst the chickens. Big Rob trod on a hen as he made his dash, and Pate came within half a foot of disemboweling Will Bean when his own spear tripped him up. But off they went, running. The melons went one way, the beans another, the barleycorns a third. Sir Eustace was shouting down at them from above, but no one paid him any mind. They are deaf to him at least, Dunk thought. By the time the old knight emerged from his tower and came scrambling down the steps, only Dunk and Egg and Bennis remained among the chickens.
"Come back!"
Sir Eustace shouted at his fast-fleeing host.
"You do not have my leave to go! You do not have my leave!"
"No use, my lord," said Bennis. "They're gone."
Sir Eustace rounded on Dunk, his moustache quivering with rage.
"You had no right to send them away. No right. I told them not to go. I forbade it. I forbade you to dismiss them."
"We never heard you, my lord."
Egg took off his hat to fan away the smoke. The chickens were cackling too loud. The old man sank down onto Standfast's lowest step.
"What did that woman offer you to deliver me to her?"
he asked Dunk in a bleak voice.
"How much gold did she give you to betray me, to send my lads away and leave me here alone?"
"You're not alone, my lord," Dunk sheathed his sword.
"I slept beneath your roof and ate your eggs this morning. I owe you some service still. I won't go slinking off with my tail between my legs. My sword's still here."
He touched the hilt.
"One sword?"
The old knight got slowly to his feet.
"What can one sword hope to do against that woman?"
"Try and keep her off your land to start with."
Dunk wished he were as certain as he sounded. The old knight's moustache trembled every time he took a breath.
"Yes," he said at last. "Better to go boldly than hide behind stone walls. Better to die a lion than a rabbit. We were the marshals of the North March for 1,000 years. I must have my armour."
He started up the steps. Egg was looking up at Dunk.
"I never knew you had a tail, sir,"
the boy said.
"Do you want a clout in the ear?"
"No, sir."
"Do you want your armor?"
"That," Dunk said, "and one thing more." There was talk of Sir Benis coming with them, but in the end Sir Eustace commanded him to stay and hold the tower. His sword would be of little use against the odds that they were like to face, and the sight of him would inflame the widow further. The Brown Knight did not require much convincing. Dunk helped him knock loose the iron pegs that held the upper steps in place. Benis clambered up them, untied the old grey hempen rope, and hauled on it with all his strength. Creaking and groaning, the wooden stair swung upward, leaving 10 feet of air between the top stone step and the tower's only entrance. Sam Stoops and his wife were both inside. The chickens would need to fend for themselves. Sitting below on his grey gelding, Sir Eustace called up to say, "If we have not returned by nightfall."
"I'll ride for Highgarden, my lord, and tell Lord Tyrrell how that woman burned your wood and murdered you."
Dunk followed Egg and Maester down the hill. The old man came after, his armour rattling softly. For once the wind was rising, and he could hear the flapping of his cloak. Where Watts Wood had stood, they found a smoking wasteland. The fire had largely burned itself out by the time they reached the wood, but here and there a few patches were still burning, fiery islands in a sea of ash and cinders. Elsewhere, the trunks of burned trees thrust like blackened spears into the sky. Other trees had fallen and lay athwart the west way with limbs charred and broken, dull red fires smouldering inside their hollow hearts. There were hot spots on the forest floor as well, and places where the smoke hung in the air like a hot grey haze. Sir Eustace was stricken with a fit of coughing, and for a few moments Dunk feared the old man would need to turn back, but finally it passed. They rode past the carcass of a red deer, and later on what might have been a badger. Nothing lived except the flies. Flies could live through anything, it seemed.
"The field of fire must have looked like this," Sir Eustace said. "It was there our woes began. 200 years ago, the last of the Green Kings perished on that field with the finest flowers of the Reach around him. My father said the dragon fire burned so hot that their swords melted in their hands. Afterward, the blades were gathered up and went to make the Iron Throne. Highgarden passed from kings to stewards, and the Osgreys dwindled and diminished, until the marshals of the North March were no more than landed knights bound in fealty to the Rowans."
Dunk had nothing to say to that, so they rode in silence for a time, till Sir Eustace coughed and said,
"Sir Duncan, do you remember the story that I told you?"
"I might, sir," said Dunk. "Which one?"
"The Little Lion."
"I remember. He was the youngest of 5 sons.
"Good,"
he coughed again.
"When he slew Lancel Lannister, the Westermen turned back. Without the king there was no war. Do you understand what I am saying?"
"Aye," Dunk said reluctantly.
"Could I kill a woman?" For once Dunk wished he were as thick as that castle wall. "It must not come to that. I must not let it come to that." A few green trees still stood where the west way crossed the Checky Water. Their trunks were charred and blackened on one side. Just beyond, the water glimmered darkly. Blue and green, Dunk thought, but all the gold is gone. The smoke had veiled the sun. Sir Eustace halted when he reached the water's edge.
"I took a holy vow. I will not cross that stream, not so long as the land beyond is hers."
The old knight wore mail and plate beneath his yellowed surcoat. His sword was on his hip.
"What if she never comes, sir?" Egg asked.
"With fire and sword," Dunk thought, "she'll come." She did, and within the hour. They heard her horses first, and then the faint metallic sound of clinking armour growing louder. The drifting smoke made it hard to tell how far off they were until her banner-bearer pushed through the ragged grey curtain. His staff was crowned by an iron spider, painted white and red, with the black banner of the Webbers hanging listlessly beneath. When he saw them across the water, he halted on the bank. Sir Lucas Inchfield appeared half a heartbeat later, armoured head to heel. Only then did Lady Rohan herself appear, astride a coal-black mare decked out in strands of silvery silk like unto a spider's web. The widow's cloak was made of the same stuff. It billowed from her shoulders and her wrists, as light as air. She was armoured, too, in a suit of green enamel scale chased with gold and silver. It fit her figure like a glove and made her look as if she were garbed in summer leaves. Her long red braid hung down behind her, bouncing as she rode. Septon Sefton rode red-faced at her side, atop a big grey gelding. On her other side was her young maester, Serric, mounted on a mule. More knights came after, half a dozen of them, attended by as many esquires. A column of mounted crossbowmen brought up the rear and fanned out to either side of the road when they reached the Checky Water and saw Dunk waiting on the other side. There were 33 fighting men, all told, excluding the Septon, the Maester, and the widow herself. One of the knights caught Dunk's eye, a squat, bald keg of a man in mail and leather, with an angry face and an ugly goiter on his neck. The Red Widow walked her mare to the edge of the water.
"Sir Eustace! Sir Duncan!" she called across the stream. "We saw your fire burning in the night."
"Saw it?" Sir Eustace shouted back. "Aye, you saw it, after you made it." "That is a vile accusation. For a vile act."
"I was asleep in my bed last night with my ladies all around me. The shouts from the walls awoke me, as they did almost everyone. Old men climbed up steep tower steps to look, and babes at the breast saw the red light and wept in fear. And that is all I know of your fire, sir."
"It was your fire, woman," insisted Sir Eustace. "My wood is gone. Gone, I say."
Septon Sefton cleared his throat.
"Sir Eustace," he boomed, "there are fires in the King's Wood too, and even in the Rainwood. The drought has turned all our woods to kindling."
Lady Rohan raised an arm and pointed.
"Look at my fields, Osgray. How dry they are. I would have been a fool to set a fire. Had the wind changed direction, the flames might well have leapt the stream and burned out half my crops."
"Might have," Sir Eustace shouted. "It was my woods that burned, and you that burned them. Most like you cast some witch's spell to drive the wind, just as you used your dark arts to slay your husbands and your brothers."
Lady Rohan's face grew harder. Dunk had seen that look at Coldmoat just before she slapped him.
"Prattle," she told the old man. "I will waste no more words on you, sir. Produce Bennis of the Brown Shield, or we will come and take him."
"That you shall not do," Sir Eustace declared in ringing tones. "That you shall never do."
His moustache twitched.
"Come no farther. This side of the stream is mine, and you are not wanted here. You shall have no hospitality from me, no bread and salt, not even shade and water. You come as an intruder. I forbid you to set foot on Osgray land."
Lady Rohan drew her braid over her shoulder. "Sir Lucas," was all she said. The long inch made a gesture, the crossbowmen dismounted, winched back their bowstrings with the help of hook and stirrup, and plucked quarrels from their quivers.
"Now, sir," her ladyship called out, when every bow was knocked and raised and ready. "What was it you forbade me?"
Dunk had heard enough.
"If you cross the stream without leave, you are breaking the king's peace."
Septon Sefton urged his horse forward a step.
"The king will neither know nor care," he called. "We are all the mother's children, sir. For her sake, stand aside."
Dunk frowned.
"I don't know much of gods, Septon, but aren't we the warrior's children too?"
He rubbed the back of his neck.
"If you try to cross, I'll stop you."
Sir Lucas the Long Inch laughed.
"Here's a hedge knight who yearns to be a hedgehog, my lady," he said to the Red Widow. "Say the word, and we'll put a dozen quarrels in him. At this distance they will punch through that armor like it was made of spit."
"No, not yet, sir."
Lady Rohan studied him from across the stream.
"You are 2 men and a boy. We are 33. How do you propose to stop us crossing?"
"Well," said Dunk, "I'll tell you, but only you."
"As you wish."
She pressed her heels into her horse and rode her out into the stream. When the water reached the mare's belly, she halted, waiting.
"Here I am. Come closer, sir. I promise not to sew you in a sack."
Sir Eustace grasped Dunk by the arm before he could respond.
"Go to her," the old knight said. "But remember the little lion."
"As you say, my lord." Dunk walked Thunder down into the water. He drew up beside her and said,
"M'lady."
"Sir Duncan."
She reached up and laid 2 fingers on his swollen lip.
"Did I do this, sir? No one else has slapped my face of late, m'lady."
"That was bad of me. A breach of hospitality. The good Septon has been scolding me."
She gazed across the water at Sir Eustace.
"I scarce remember Adam any longer. It was more than half my life ago. I remember that I loved him, though. I have not loved any of the others."
"His father put him in the blackberries with his brothers," Dunk said. "He was fond of blackberries."
"I remember. He used to pick them for me, and we'd eat them in a bowl of cream."
The king pardoned the old man for Damon, said Dunk. It is past time you pardoned him for Adam.
Give me Bennis, and I'll consider that.
Bennis is not mine to give. She sighed.
I would as life not have to kill you.
I would as life not die.
Then give me Bennis. We'll cut his nose off and hand him back, and that will be the end of that.
It won't, though, Dunk said. There's still the dam to deal with, and the fire. Will you give us the men who set it?
There were lantern bugs in that wood, she said. It may be they set the fire off with their little lanterns.
No more teasing now, m'lady, Dunk warned her. This is no time for it. Tear down the dam, and let Sir Eustace have the water to make up for the wood. That's fair, is it not?
It might be, if I had burned the wood, which I did not. I was at Coldmoat, safe abed. She looked down at the water. What is there to prevent us from riding right across the stream? Have you scattered caltrops amongst the rocks, hidden arches in the ashes? Tell me what you think is going to stop us.
Me? He pulled one gauntlet off. In Flea Bottom I was always bigger and stronger than the other boys, so I used to beat them bloody and steal from them. The old man taught me not to do that. It was wrong, he said, and besides, sometimes little boys have great big brothers. Here, have a look at this.
Dunk twisted the ring off his finger and held it out to her. She had to let loose of her braid to take it. Gold, she said, when she felt the weight of it. What is this, sir?
She turned it over in her hand.
A signet. Gold and onyx.
Her green eyes narrowed as she studied the seal.
Where did you find this, sir?
In a boot, wrapped in rags and stuffed up in the toe.
Lady Rohan's fingers closed around it. She glanced at Egg and old Sir Eustace.
You took a great risk in showing me this ring, sir. But how does it avail us?
If I should command my men to cross...
Well, said Dunk, that would mean I'd have to fight.
And die?
Most like, he said, and then Egg would go back where he comes from and tell what happened here.
Not if he died as well.
I don't think you'd kill a boy of 10, he said, hoping he was right. Not this boy of 10, you wouldn't. You've got 33 men there, like you said. Men talk, that fat one there especially. No matter how deep you dug the graves, the tail would out. And then, well, might be a spotted spider's bite can kill a lion, but a dragon is a different sort of beast.
I would sooner be the dragon's friend.
She tried the ring on her finger. It was too big even for her thumb.
Dragon or no, I must have Bennis of the Brown Shield.
No.
You are 7 feet of stubborn.
Less an inch.
She gave him back the ring. I cannot return to Coldmoat empty-handed. They will say the Red Widow has lost her bite, that she was too weak to do justice, that she could not protect her small folk. You do not understand, sir.
I might. Better than you know. I remember once some little lord in the Stormlands took Sir Arlan into service to help him fight some other little lord. When I asked the old man what they were fighting over, he said, "Nothing, lad. It's just some pissing contest."
Lady Rohan gave him a shocked look, but could sustain it no more than half a heartbeat before it turned into a grin. I have heard 1,000 empty courtesies in my time, but you are the first knight who ever said pissing in my presence.
Her freckled face went somber.
Those pissing contests are how lords judge one another's strength, and woe to any man who shows his weakness. A woman must needs piss twice as hard if she hopes to rule. And if that woman should happen to be small, Lord Stackhouse covets my Horseshoe Hills. Sir Clifford Conklin has an old claim to Leafy Lake. Those dismal Durwells live by stealing cattle. And beneath mine own roof I have the Long Inch. Every day I wake wondering if this might be the day he marries me by force. And, curled tight around her braid, as hard as if it were a rope, and she was dangling over a precipice. He wants to, I know. He holds back for fear of my wrath, just as Conklin and Stackhouse and the Durwells tread carefully where the Red Widow is concerned. If any of them thought for a moment that I had turned weak and soft.
Dunk put the ring back on his finger and drew his dagger. The widow's eyes went wide at the sight of naked steel.
What are you doing? She said. Have you lost your wits? There are 12 crossbows trained on you.
You wanted blood for blood.
He laid the dagger against his cheek.
They told you wrong. It wasn't Venice cut that digger. It was me.
He pressed the edge of the steel into his face, slashed downward. When he shook the blood off the blade, some spattered on her face. More freckles, he thought.
There. The Red Widow has her due. A cheek for a cheek.
You are quite mad. The smoke had filled her eyes with tears. If you were better born, I'd marry you.
Aye, m'lady, and if pigs had wings and scales and breathed flame, they'd be as good as dragons.
Dunk slid the knife back in its sheath. His face had begun to throb. The blood ran down his cheek and dripped onto his gorget. The smell made Thunder snort and pour the water.
Give me the men who burned the wood.
No one burned the wood, she said. But if some man of mine had done so, it must have been to please me. How could I give such a man to you? She glanced back at her escort. It would be best if Sir Eustace were just to withdraw his accusation.
Those pigs will be breathing fire first, m'lady.
In that case, I must assert my innocence before the eyes of gods and men. Tell Sir Eustace that I demand an apology or a trial. The choice is his. She wheeled her horse about to ride back to her men.
The stream would be their battleground.
Septon Sefton waddled out and said a prayer, beseeching the Father above to look down on these two men and judge them justly, asking the warrior to lend his strength to the man whose cause was just and true, begging the mother's mercy for the liar, that he might be forgiven for his sins. When the praying was over and done with, he turned to Sir Eustace Osgray one last time.
"Sir," he said, "I beg you once again, withdraw your accusation."
"I will not," the old man said, his moustache trembling.
The fat Septon turned to Lady Rohan. "Good sister, if you did this thing, confess your guilt and offer good Sir Eustace some restitution for his wood. Elsewise, blood must flow."
"My champion will prove my innocence before the eyes of gods and men."
"Trial by battle is not the only way," said the Septon, waist deep in the water. "Let us go to Golden Grove, I implore you both, and place the matter before Lord Rowan for his judgment."
"Never," said Sir Eustace. The Red Widow shook her head. Sir Lucas Inchfield looked at Lady Rohan, his face dark with fury.
"You will marry me when this mummer's farce is done, as your Lord Father wished."
"My Lord Father never knew you as I do," she gave back. Dunk went to one knee beside Egg and put the signet back in the boy's hand. 4 three-headed dragons, 2 and 2, the arms of Makar, Prince of Summerhall.
"Back in the boot," he said. "But if it happens that I die, go to the nearest of your father's friends and have him take you back to Summerall. Don't try to cross the whole reach on your own. So you don't forget, or my ghost will come and clout you in the ear."
"Yes, sir," said Egg, "but I'd sooner you didn't die."
"It's too hot to die."
Dunk donned his helm, and Egg helped him fasten it tightly to his gorget. The blood was sticky on his face, though Sir Eustace had torn a piece off his cloak to help stop the gash from bleeding. He rose and went to Thunder. Most of the smoke had blown away, he saw as he swung up onto the saddle, but the sky was still dark.
"Clouds," he thought. "Dark clouds. It had been so long. Maybe it's an omen. But is it his omen or mine?"
Dunk was no good with omens. Across the stream, Sir Lucas had mounted up as well. His horse was a chestnut courser, a splendid animal, swift and strong, but not as large as Thunder. What the horse lacked in size, he made up for in armor, though. He was clad in crinet, chanfron, and a coat of light chain. The Long Inch himself wore black enameled plate and silvery ringmail. An onyx spider squatted malignantly atop his helmet, but his shield displayed his own arms, a bend sinister, checky black and white, on a pale grey field. Dunk watched Sir Lucas hand it to a squire. He does not mean to use it. When another squire delivered him a poleaxe, he knew why. The axe was long and lethal, with a banded haft, a heavy head, and a wicked spike on its back, but it was a two-handed weapon. The Long Inch would need to trust in his armor to protect him. I need to make him rue that choice. His own shield was on his left arm, the shield Tansel had painted with his elm and falling star. A child's rhyme echoed in his head. "Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell." He slid his long sword from its scabbard. The weight of it felt good in his hands.
He put his heels into Thunder's flanks and walked the big Destrier down into the water. Across the stream, Sir Lucas did the same. Dunk pressed right so as to present the long inch with his left side protected by his shield. That was not something Sir Lucas was willing to concede him. He turned his courser quickly, and they came together in a tumult of grey steel and green spray. Sir Lucas struck with his poleaxe. Dunk had to twist in the saddle to catch it on his shield. The force of it shot down his arm and jarred his teeth together. He swung his sword in answer, a sideways cut that took the other knight beneath his upraised arm. Steel screamed on steel, and it was on. The long inch spurred his courser in a circle, trying to get around to Dunk's unprotected side, but Thunder wheeled to meet him, snapping at the other horse. Sir Lucas delivered one crashing blow after another, standing in his stirrups to get all his weight and strength behind the axe head. Dunk shifted his shield to catch each blow as it came. Half crouched beneath its oak, he hacked at Inchfield's arms and side and legs, but his plate turned every stroke. Around they went, and around again, the water lapping at their legs. The long inch attacked, and Dunk defended, watching for a weakness. Finally he saw it. Every time Sir Lucas lifted his axe for another blow, a gap appeared beneath his arm. There was mail and leather there, and padding underneath, but no steel plate. Dunk kept his shield up, trying to time his attack. Soon, soon. The axe crashed down, wrenched free, came up. Now! He slammed his spurs into Thunder, driving him closer, and thrust with his long sword to drive his point through the opening. But the gap vanished as quick as it had appeared. His sword point scraped a rondel, and Dunk, overextended, almost lost his seat. The axe descended with a crash, slanting off the iron rim of Dunk's shield, crunching against the side of his helm, and striking Thunder, a glancing blow along the neck. The Destrier screamed and reared up on two legs, his eye rolling white in pain as the sharp, coppery smell of blood filled the air. He lashed out with his iron hooves, just as the long inch was moving in. One caught Sir Lucas in the face, the other on a shoulder. Then the heavy warhorse came down atop his courser. It all happened in a heartbeat. The two horses went down in a tangle, kicking and biting at each other, churning up the water and the mud below. Dunk tried to throw himself from the saddle, but one foot tangled in a stirrup. He fell face first, sucking down one desperate gulp of air before the stream came rushing into the helm through the eye slit. His foot was still caught up, and he felt a savage yank as Thunder's struggles almost pulled his leg out of its socket. Just as quickly, he was free, turning, sinking. For a moment, he flailed helplessly in the water. The world was blue and green and brown. The weight of his armor pulled him down until his shoulder bumped the stream bed. If that is down, the other way is up. Dunk's steel-clad hands fumbled at the stones and sands, and somehow he gathered his legs up under him and stood. He was reeling, dripping mud, with water pouring from the breath holes in his dinted helm, but he was standing. He sucked down air. His battered shield still clung to his left arm, but his scabbard was empty, and his sword was gone. There was blood inside his helm as well as water. When he tried to shift his weight, his ankle sent a lance of pain right up his leg. Both horses had struggled back to their feet, he saw. He turned his head, squinting one eye through a veil of blood, searching for his foe. Gone, he thought. He's drowned, or Thunder crushed his skull in. Sir Lucas burst up out of the water right in front of him, sword in hand. He struck Dunk's neck a savage blow, and only the thickness of his gorget kept his head upon his shoulders. He had no blade to answer with, only his shield. He gave ground, and the long inch came after, screaming and slashing. Dunk's upraised arm took a numbing blow above the elbow. A cut to his hip made him grunt in pain. As he backed away, a rock turned beneath his foot, and he went down to one knee, chest high in the water. He got his shield up, but this time Sir Lucas struck so hard, he split the thick oak right down the middle and drove the remnants back into Dunk's face. His ears were ringing and his mouth was full of blood, but somewhere, far away, he heard Egg screaming, "Get him, sir! Get him! Get him! He's right there!" Dunk dived forward. Sir Lucas had wrenched his sword free for another cut. Dunk slammed into him waist high and knocked him off his feet. The stream swallowed both of them again, but this time Dunk was ready. He kept one arm around the long inch and forced him to the bottom. Bubbles came streaming out from behind Inchfield's battered, twisted visor, but still he fought. He found a rock at the bottom of the stream and began hammering at Dunk's head and hands. Dunk fumbled at his sword belt. "Have I lost the dagger too?" he wondered. No, there it was. His hand closed around the hilt, and he wrenched it free and drove it slowly through the churning water, through the iron rings and boiled leather beneath the arm of Lucas the Long Inch, turning it as he pushed. Sir Lucas jerked and twisted, and the strength left him. Dunk shoved away and floated. His chest was on fire. A fish flashed past his face, long and white and slender. "What's that?" he wondered. "What's that? What's that?" He woke in the wrong castle. When his eyes opened, he did not know where he was. It was blessedly cool. The taste of blood was in his mouth, and he had a cloth across his eyes, a heavy cloth, fragrant with some unguent. It smelled of cloves, he thought. Dunk groped at his face, pulled the cloth away. Above him, torchlight played against a high ceiling. Ravens were walking on the rafters overhead, peering down with small black eyes and quawking at him. I am not blind, at least. He was in a maester's tower. The walls were lined with racks of herbs and potions in earthen jars and vessels of green glass. A long trestle table nearby was covered with parchments, books, and queer bronze instruments, all spattered with droppings from the ravens in the rafters. He could hear them muttering at one another. He tried to sit. It proved a bad mistake. His head swam and his left leg screamed in agony when he put the slightest weight upon it. His ankle was wrapped in linen, he saw, and there were linen strips around his chest and shoulders, too. "Be still." A face appeared above him, young and pinched, with dark brown eyes on either side of a hooked nose. Dunk knew that face. The man who owned it was all in grey, with a chain collar hanging loose about his neck, a maester's chain of many metals. Dunk grabbed him by the wrist. "Where?" "Cold Moat," said the maester. "You were too badly injured to return to Standfast, so Lady Rohan commanded us to bring you here. Drink this." He raised a cup of something to Dunk's lips. The potion had a bitter taste, like vinegar, but at least it washed away the taste of blood. Dunk made himself drink it all. Afterward, he flexed the fingers of his sword hand and then the other. "At least my hands still work, and my arms."
What did I hurt?"
"What not?" the maester snorted. "A broken ankle? A sprained knee? A broken collarbone? Bruising? Your upper torso is largely green and yellow, and your right arm is a purply black. I thought your skull was cracked as well, but it appears not. There is that gash in your face, sir. You will have a scar, I fear. Oh, and you had drowned by the time we pulled you from the water."
"Drowned," said Dunk.
"I never suspected that one man could swallow so much water. Not even a man as large as you, sir. Count yourself fortunate that I am iron-born. The priests of the drowned god know how to drown a man and bring him back, and I have made a study of their beliefs and customs."
"I drowned."
Dunk tried to sit again, but the strength was not in him. "I drowned in water that did not even come up to my neck." He laughed, then groaned in pain.
"Sir Lucas? Dead? Did you doubt it?"
"No. Dunk doubted many things, but not that. He remembered how the strength had gone out of the long inch's limbs all at once.
Egg," he got out. "I want egg."
"Hunger is a good sign," the maester said, "but it is sleep you need just now, not food."
Dunk shook his head and regretted it at once. "Egg is my squire."
"Is he? A brave lad, and stronger than he looks. He was the one to pull you from the stream. He helped us get that armor off you, too, and rode with you in the way when we brought you here. He would not sleep himself, but sat by your side with your sword across his lap in case someone tried to do you harm. He even suspected me, and insisted that I taste anything I meant to feed you. A queer child, but devoted."
"Where is he?"
"Sir Eustace asked the boy to attend him at the wedding feast. There was no one else on his side. It would have been discourteous for him to refuse."
"Wedding feast?" Dunk did not understand.
"You would not know, of course. Cold Moat and Standfast were reconciled after your battle. Lady Rohan begged leave of old Sir Eustace to cross his land and visit Adam's grave, and he granted her that right. She knelt before the blackberries and began to weep, and he was so moved that he went to comfort her. They spent the whole night talking of young Adam and my lady's noble father. Lord Wyman and Sir Eustace were fast friends until the Blackfyre Rebellion. His lordship and my lady were wed this morning by our good Septon Sefton. Eustace Osgray is the Lord of Coldmoat, and his checky lion flies beside the Webber Spider on every tower and wall."
Dunk's world was spinning slowly all around him. "That potion, he's put me back to sleep."
He closed his eyes and let all the pain drain out of him. He could hear the ravens quawking and screaming at each other, and the sound of his own breath, and something else as well.
a softer sound, steady, heavy, somehow soothing.
"What's that?" he murmured sleepily. "That sound?"
"That?"
the maester listened.
"That's just rain."
He did not see her till the day they took their leave.
"This is folly, sir," Septon Sefton complained, as Dunk limped heavily across the yard, swinging his splinted foot and leaning on a crutch. "Maester Serrick says you are not half-healed as yet, and this rain, you're like to catch a chill if you do not drown again. At least wait for the rain to stop."
"That may be years." Dunk was grateful to the fat Septon who had visited him near every day, to pray for him, ostensibly, though more time seemed to be taken up with tales and gossip. He would miss his loose and lively tongue and cheerful company, but that changed nothing.
"I need to go."
The rain was lashing down around them, a thousand cold grey whips upon his back. His cloak was already sodden. It was the white wool cloak Sir Eustace had given him with the green and gold checkered border. The old knight had pressed it on him once again as a parting gift.
"For your courage and leal service, sir," he said.
The brooch that pinned the cloak at his shoulder was a gift as well, an ivory spider brooch with silver legs. Clusters of crushed garnets made spots upon its back.
"I hope this is not some mad quest to hunt down Venice," Septon Sefton said. "You are so bruised and battered that I would fear for you if that one found you in such a state."
Venice, Dunk thought bitterly. Bloody Venice. While Dunk had been making his stand at the stream, Venice had tied up Sam Stoops and his wife, ransacked Standfast from top to bottom, and made off with every item of value he could find, from candles, clothes, and weaponry, to Osgray's old silver cup, and a small cache of coin the old man had hidden in his solar behind a mildewed tapestry. One day, Dunk hoped to meet Sir Venice of the Brown Shield again, and when he did, Venice will keep.
"Where will you go?"
The Septon was panting heavily. Even with Dunk on a crutch, he was too fat to match his pace.
"Fair Isle, Arranhull, the Trident. There are hedges everywhere." He shrugged. "I've always wanted to see the wall."
"The wall?" The Septon jerked to a stop. "I despair of you, Sir Duncan," he shouted, standing in the mud with outspread hands as the rain came down around him. "Pray, sir, pray for the crone to light your way."
Dunk kept walking. She was waiting for him inside the stable, standing by the yellow bales of hay, in a gown as green as summer. "Sir Duncan," she said, when he came pushing through the door. Her red braid hung down in front, the end of it brushing against her thighs.
"It is good to see you on your feet."
"You never saw me on my back," he thought.
"Milady, what brings you to the stables? It's a wet day for a ride."
"I might say the same to you."
"Egg told you?"
"I owe him another clout in the ear."
"Be glad he did, or I would have sent men after you to drag you back. It was cruel of you to try and steal away without so much as a farewell."
She had never come to see him while he was in Maester Serrick's care, not once.
"That green becomes you well, milady," he said. "It brings out the colour of your eyes."
He shifted his weight awkwardly on the crutch.
"I'm here for my horse."
"You do not need to go. There is a place for you here when you're recovered. Captain of my guards, and Egg can join my other squires. No one need ever know who he is."
"Thank you, milady, but no."
Thunder was in a stall a dozen places down. Dunk hobbled toward him.
"Please, reconsider, sir. These are perilous times, even for dragons and their friends. Stay until you've healed."
She walked along beside him. "It would please Lord Eustace, too. He is very fond of you."
"Very fond," Dunk agreed. "If his daughter weren't dead, he'd want me to marry her. Then you could be my lady mother. I never had a mother, much less a lady mother."
For half a heartbeat, Lady Rohan looked as though she was going to slap him again. Maybe he should just kick my crutch away.
"You are angry with me, sir," she said instead. "You must let me make amends."
"Well," he said, "you could help me saddle Thunder."
"I had something else in mind."
She reached out her hand for his, a freckled hand, her fingers strong and slender. I'll bet she's freckled all over.
"How well do you know horses?"
"I ride one."
An old destrier bred for battle, slow-footed and ill-tempered, not a horse to ride from place to place.
If I need to get from place to place, it's him or these.
Dunk pointed at his feet.
You have large feet, she observed.
Large hands as well. I think you must be large all over.
Too large for most palfreys. They'd look like ponies with you perched upon their backs. Still, a swifter mount would serve you well. A big courser with some Dornish sand steed for endurance.
She pointed to the stall across from Thunder's.
A horse like her.
She was a blood bay with a bright eye and a long, fiery mane. Lady Rohan took a carrot from her sleeves and stroked her head as she took it.
The carrot, not the finger, she told the horse, before she turned again to Dunk.
I call her Flame, but you may name her as you please. Call her Amends, if you like. For a moment he was speechless. He leaned on the crutch and looked at the blood bay with new eyes. She was magnificent. A better mount than any the old man had ever owned. You had only to look at those long, clean limbs to see how swift she'd be.
I bred her for beauty and for speed.
He turned back to Thunder.
I cannot take her.
Why not?
She is too good a horse for me. Just look at her.
A flush crept up Rohan's face. She clutched her braid, twisting it between her fingers.
I had to marry. You know that. My father's will...
Oh, don't be such a fool.
What else should I be? I'm thick as a castle wall and bastard-born as well.
Take the horse. I refuse to let you go without something to remember me by.
I will remember you, m'lady. Have no fear of that.
Take her! Dunk grabbed her braid and pulled her face to his. It was awkward with the crutch and the difference in their heights. He almost fell before he got his lips on hers. He kissed her hard. One of her hands went around his neck and one around his chest. He learned more about kissing in a moment than he had ever known from watching. But when they finally broke apart, he drew his dagger.
I know what I want to remember you by, m'lady.
Egg was waiting for him at the gatehouse, mounted on a handsome new sorrel palfrey and holding Maester's lead. When Dunk trotted up to them, on Thunder, the boy looked surprised.
She said she wanted to give you a new horse, sir. Even high-born ladies don't get all they want, Dunk said, as they rode out across the drawbridge. It wasn't a horse I wanted.
The moat was so high, it was threatening to overflow its banks.
I took something else to remember her by instead. A lock of that red hair.
He reached under his cloak, brought out the braid, and smiled. In the iron cage at the crossroads, the corpses still embraced. They looked lonely, forlorn. Even the flies had abandoned them, and the crows as well. Only some scraps of skin and hair remained upon the dead men's bones. Dunk halted, frowning. His ankle was hurting from the ride, but it made no matter. Pain was as much a part of knighthood as were swords and shields.
"Which way is south?"
he asked Egg. It was hard to know when the world was all rain and mud and the sky was grey as a granite wall.
"That's south, sir,"
Egg pointed.
"That's north. Somewhere all is south. Your father.
The wall is north."
Dunk looked at him. "That's a long way to ride. I have a new horse, sir."
"So you do." Dunk had to smile.
"And why would you want to see the wall?"
"Well," said Egg, "I hear it's tall."